From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, this Columbus Day, who really discovered America? We'll talk about that. Here's what's happening. As Dr. Louis Turi predicted last week during this window, he said there would be a major earthquake worldwide. There was. About an hour or so ago, a magnitude 7.4 quake hits the Philippines. No tsunami. Several people reported dead. A surge of optimism tonight for a possible compromise to end the partial government shutdown and avoid a U.S. default as soon as this week, but got jolted a little bit by the sudden postponement of a White House meeting between President Barack Obama and congressional leaders. Hopefully, this is all being done to allow the Senate leaders time to continue making important progress. Let's get this thing done. Social Security, veterans benefits, federal pensions. Preliminary figures are showing you will get an increase next year of 1.5%. It's very low, but they say that it's echoing consumer prices. Microsoft is updating its Windows software for cell phones to accommodate larger devices and make it easier for motorists to reduce distractions while driving. Now, in these updates, this is probably what you're going to be able to do. You can configure the feature to automatically send out a reply that simply says you're driving, so it won't ring, you can't text. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein, our expert on all this technology. Why don't people just not call and text on a phone when they're driving, Lauren?
Right, or why not just turn off your phone so you won't be disturbed by an incoming call?
It would be simple. I don't think we need software for
it,
that.
It does seem so. This whole area of distracted driving, though, has gotten a lot of attention, not just from the phone manufacturers, but regulatory attention, too. And, it is mostly a matter of common sense. You are not required by law to answer calls that reach you while you are driving on the freeway at 65 miles an hour or to make calls. Now the car makers, aren't making this any easier,
no,
of course, because they're building all this into the cars, voice systems to read the email, all of this. These can be very convenient, but everything is a distraction potentially, and that doesn't just include computers. It includes eating the Big Mac and the kid yelling in the back seat and the people putting on makeup and all these sorts of things. And unfortunately, trying to trust the common sense on this just hasn't always worked. In this particular case, though, with Microsoft, if you want to buy that particular kind of phone, having that kind of option. Seems like a good thing, but you don't have to have that option in order not to answer incoming calls and be distracted by incoming calls.
You just need a little discipline, don't you?
Just a very little, actually.
All right, thanks, Lauren. Lauren Weinstein's website, by the way, linked up. You'll find it at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. More on the NSA. The NSA is harvesting hundreds of millions of contact lists from your personal email and instant messaging accounts all around the world, many of them belonging to you. This, according to senior intelligence officials and top secret documents provided by the former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Man, they just don't stop. Listen to this. A friend of a Muslim Brotherhood spiritual leader's name's Yusuf al-Qaradawi is making the claim that Israel planted a chip in the radical cleric's brain and is engaging in mind control with him. A six-year-old Central Florida boy sadly drowned in a pool on a Carnival cruise ship over the weekend after hasty efforts to resuscitate him simply failed. The boy, just outside of Orlando, Florida, was spotted underwater in midship pool by passengers. By the time they got to him, it was too late. And Richard Phillips, of course, was the captain of that cargo ship at the time that was held by Somali pirates during the cargo ship's hijacking back in April of 2009. His actions during the incident have been described as heroic, although some crew members have considered him reckless. He was the basis of the new movie, Captain Phillips, starring Tom Hanks. And our own captain, Captain Kelly Sweeney, went to the movie. And though we don't normally do movie reviews, this is tied into real life. Kelly, what did you think of that?
Ahoy, George. Well, There's an old saying among mariners that going to sea is 99% routine and 1% sheer terror. And I think the movie did a great job at hinting at the 99% of the routine, Phillips commuting to the job, everybody working on board, and then boom, here comes the 1% of the terror, in this case, a pirate attack.
A pirate attack, indeed. Do you think it seemed pretty realistic based on the accounts of what we've heard since 2009?
Oh, yes, but I think even according to Captain Phillips recently, he said, yes, they did a great job at portraying it, but it was even worse than that.
This was based on his book, and Tom Hanks, just based on the little trailers I've seen, Kelly, did a great job. You know, he's just been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
Tom, he did a great job. Tom Hanks deserves an Oscar for this, George. And, you know, the chief mate on there, Shane Murphy, I've sailed with Shane on another ship. And I can say for sure that the actor who portrayed Shane Murphy in this movie did a great job at showing the professionalism, the smarts, and the real hard-charging, positive attitude that Shane Murphy has in real life. And what I really liked about the movie, it showed the courage and the professionalism of the men and women in the Merchant Marine, and it showed the vicious and desperate face of modern piracy and why the world must do all it can to stop the spread of it.
And I was going to ask you, just how bad is modern piracy right now?
George, there have been nearly 200 incidents of piracy this year worldwide, not just in Somalia. And as we speak, there are 57 mariners who are going through the same living hell that Captain Phillips did at gunpoint with Somali pirates holding them hostage.
Unbelievable. Okay, Kelly, thanks for that. I appreciate that. Fascinating movie indeed. I went and saw Gravity this weekend, by the way. The effects were absolutely stunning. If you love space, this was something else. I think Sandra Bullock is going to get an Academy Award for this. Her performance was just stellar there. George Clooney was good, too. It was a great movie, by the way. If you like effects, it was a great movie. Not much plot to it, but it was still good. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center checked in with us tonight, said that he's getting UFO reports from over the St. Louis area. That's fascinating. People are seeing some kind of strange object there. I remember years ago, a number of police officers from the Millstadt, Illinois area, right across the river from St. Louis, reported seeing a large triangular-shaped object out in that area. And also UFO reports from Russia and spooky pictures from the International Space Station. Thought maybe they caught a big UFO. It ended up being a Russian missile launch that took place last Thursday. So a lot of these can be identified. Opponents of the development of a type of genetically modified rice enriched with vitamin A are wicked, according to the UK Environmental Secretary. Owen Peterson says that they could be condemning millions of people in the developing world to a premature death. We're going to talk about GMOs for a couple hours with none other than Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our guest for the next couple hours, Jeffrey Smith, Genetic Roulette, the documented health risks of genetically modified foods. Jeffrey is the executive director as well of the Institute for Responsible Technology, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jeffrey, how are you?
Great. Great to be back.
Good. You know, the United Kingdom minister there says that you're wicked if you don't support genetically modified foods there. Are you wicked, Jeffrey?
You know, this guy is just, he's basically a Monsanto mouthpiece in minister's clothing. Whenever he talks about the GMOs, he gets it completely wrong. He said golden rice could be saving blind kids for years and years. It's not ready. What happened was it's not even been created to the point where it could be commercialized if it were successful. And, of course, the process is so dangerous. It produces beta carotene, which is a precursor for vitamin A, but it's two steps away from producing a known toxin, retinoic acid, which might create birth defects. And everyone knows that, but no one has ever tested to see if the golden rice might do that. For some reason, they're like so test averse, they're willing to feed it to children in a feeding trial in China. And they did this, and when the Chinese government found out, they fired the three Chinese scientists. Tufts University suspended some of the rights of one of their scientists. But you know, they're not willing to do the research to find out if it might cause serious health problems.
In China, they probably will sentence the three scientists to death.
Well, they didn't in this case. They kicked them out, but they did not kill them. And they have killed, obviously, the people that were involved in food safety issues.
Yes, they have. Absolutely. Or some of these people have committed suicide. I mean, they take this stuff pretty darn seriously out there, Jeffrey. It's non-GMO month. Tell me about that.
Well, non-GMO month happens once a year in October. And it turns out it's also the World Food Prize week. And in a couple of days, the World Food Prize, which is sponsored by Monsanto and Syngenta and the other biotech companies, is awarding a prize to Monsanto's vice president and Syngenta's top executive. So two of the three World Food Prize recipients this week are biotech people. And, of course, it's caused people to be up in arms, especially in non-GMO month. There was a march on Monsanto on Saturday. People in more than 50 countries participated, and this was the second this year. More than 2 million
That's
participated
right.
In May. I'm not sure what the numbers were from Saturday. We're doing a very, very important GMO summit. You can go to gmosummit.com, and we have 20 different interviews, 20 interviews of some of the best GMO experts and spokespeople, Vonda Nashiva, Robin O'Brien, Michael Hansen, et cetera, some really fantastic folks. And so at gmosummit.com, people can sign up. It's completely free.
Jeffrey, how did you get involved in challenging GMOs?
Well, you know, I was first made aware of it by a genetic engineer. And he was an award-winning genetic engineer. He won an award, $250,000 for his work. And he was doing research in cancer. And he realized that the technology was extremely dangerous, that the process of inserting a gene from, say, bacteria into soybeans not only creates a completely new protein that's never been in the human food supply, but it can mess up so many other things in the plant DNA, and that the Monsanto, this I learned about this in 1996, just before Monsanto was going to plant all this genetically engineered corn and soy in my state in Iowa, and they hadn't done the testing. So this scientist, from a technical standpoint, was aware that we were about to feed the products of an immature, dangerous science to the entire population and release the genes outside where they would self-propagate, become part of the permanent gene pool forever. And that the, Monsanto was claiming it was perfectly safe, the U.S. government was claiming it was perfectly safe, and here was a scientist who knew the truth and knew that the others were lying. And so I was compelled, I figured this information is so powerful and potent, and I was involved in communications and marketing and education,
yeah.
I figured I would just translate his concerns into English and get it around, and maybe in a few years it would be done. Well, that was 17 years ago, and I think we're on the verge, actually, of kicking it out. And I can tell you why a little later, but that's how I got started.
What percent of grown crops are GMO?
There's 9 food crops related to GMOs. There's 93% of the soy, 88% of the corn, 95% or more of the sugar beets,
wow.
About 94% of the cotton. So these are way up there. And then there's, I don't know the percentage of alfalfa because that's growing. More than half of the papaya from Hawaii and China, a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash. No one has done the research to find out how much. And then there's, I think that's it, soy corn, cotton, canola, alfalfa, sugar beets, and papaya, zucchini, and yellow squash.
So this percent of all those plants you just mentioned, what do you think their total percent is of the regular growing crop?
That's a great question. I've known that number in the past, but I can't remember it. Because soy and corn and cotton are absolutely huge crops, and so is alfalfa. So that actually is a significant percentage of the U.S. crop acreage.
You know, Jeffrey, if people want to fight back, what do they do? I mean, are they stuck with the stores getting GMO foods and putting them in there, and they're not labeled? You have no idea what they are.
Well, we're actually winning the fight, George. We're winning the fight in the consumer marketplace. Now, we don't have to have 51% of Americans not eating GMOs to create a difference. What we need is a tipping point. Enough people avoiding GMOs so that it's felt in the pocketbooks of the food companies. That's how Europe kicked it out. It wasn't the European Commission that stopped GM food from coming into Europe. It was Nestle's and Burger King and McDonald's and Unilever, because consumers there were exposed to the dangers of GMOs in the press back in 1999, but not in the U.S. However, the tipping point has been achieved in the U.S. in the natural food industry, and we're about to see the big battle for market share in the conventional food industry. We're going to hear about a product soon that's going to be labeled non-GMO, that's not sold in health food stores, and that's when the clock starts ticking. If we can drive the market share of that product up and erode the market share of the GMO-laden product leaders that are still on the shelves there, every other food company is going to look at that and say, my goodness, we better not be second declaring non-GMO in our product category.
Interesting take.
We're right on the cusp here. I mean, I would not be surprised if by the end of this year or certainly next year, we'll see the tipping point in the United States achieved for direct GMO derivatives. It'll take a little longer for animal feed, but I don't think we'll see GMOs in food much longer in the U.S. with this kind of momentum.
Any polls? Obviously, I'm not sure we need one, but if you had corn that was GMO and corn that was non-GMO in a store with the appropriate signage, I would guess 98% of the people would buy the corn that is non-GMO. Is that pretty accurate?
This is a great question because there's two answers to this. First of all, the 53% is what the people said generically, that they would not buy a GMO product if it were labeled. And another study said 58%, although 93% said they want it labeled. So 9 out of 10 Americans want it labeled, but the FDA is told to promote biotechnology, and so they ignore 9 out of 10 Americans in order to promote the economic interests of 5 GMO companies. But the way you worded it was brilliant, because it turns out there was a study that purported to say that Canadians, when given a choice at a farm store, chose the GM corn. And this won an award. It was published in a peer-reviewed journal in England, and it turns out there was a reporter from the Globe and Mail in Toronto that had visited the farm store and taken a picture, and what it revealed was hanging above the non-GMO corn was a big sign listing all these chemicals that had been sprayed on it with a big question saying, would you eat wormy corn? And there was all this pro-GMO material around, and there was even one of the so-called scientists who published the paper, if he saw someone buying the non-GM corn, he would confront them and convince them to buy the GM corn. None of that was mentioned in the article. It was a total sham.
They played with the mind.
They did indeed.
Jeffrey, tell us about some potential diseases or illnesses that could be attributed to GMOs. And when I say could, because I want you to tell me what data we have behind that.
Very good. And I'd like to spend a lot of time on that tonight, because I'm going to list a bunch of them. And I'm going to invite people. We have created a special page now at GMOsummit.com. If people go there and sign up for the free summit, they'll have, as soon as they sign up, they're going to end up with a page of charts. Now, these charts are amazing. I'll describe them for those that can't get online, of course. The charts show a correlation between the introduction and growth of GMOs or Roundup, which is the herbicide sprayed on Roundup-ready GMOs, which is the most popular variety. Those are genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with Monsanto's weed killer Roundup. And we're going to go through inflammatory bowel disease, intestinal infection, peritonitis, irritable bowel, cancers, diabetes, kidney problems. We're going to go to deaths from Parkinson's, senile dementia, hypertension, blood pressure, autism, obesity, liver cancer, thyroid cancer. We're going to go through these, and we're going to describe the correlations and why, scientifically, these particular diseases, as well as others, anorexia, aggression, depression, hyperactivity, etc., can be related to the qualities of GMOs. We'll go into the specific diseases, and we'll also definitely talk about gluten-related disorders, because that's actually on the rise big time. when you go around the aisles of the supermarket, so many people see gluten-free, gluten-free.
Yeah, it's
what's
everywhere.
Going on? Now, wheat is not genetically engineered, but we believe that eating GMOs cause such significant disruption in the gut walls.
Hold on for a second, Jeffrey. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about this right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're a Coast Insider, we'll be chatting with Joshua P. Warren tomorrow at 8 p.m. Pacific time. So jump in the room and have some fun as he talks about the paranormal world. And welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Smith with us as we talk about GMOs. We'll take your phone calls with Jeffrey next hour, split show for you tonight. Jeffrey, back to some of these diseases and disorders, if you would, please.
Yes. Well, if you go to, as I say, go to GMOsummit.com. I'm talking to the audience here. They can look at some of these charts as we go through them. And I first want to talk about gastrointestinal disorders. Now, when the American Academy of Environmental Medicine looked at the animal feeding studies, they said these animals are sick as a result of eating GMOs, mm-hmm. and one of the categories was GI tract problems. Now, I've given more than 80 talks in the last year where I have interviewed my audiences and said, okay, how many of you have gotten rid of a lot of GMOs and felt better as a result? And when I had a group in the audience, every single time there was at least a small handful of people that said they got better with gastrointestinal disorders. And I've heard about a one woman that, 3 days into a non-GMO diet, all symptoms of Crohn's disease disappeared. She had had it for 30 years. Irritable bowel gone in one person, 3 weeks, another person, 6 to 8 weeks. And I've heard these things, ulcerative colitis, constipation. I've heard these things over and over again for over a year. I even went to doctor's offices and interviewed patients. And the doctors themselves told me that their patients are getting better. Then livestock will get switched to non-GM soy or corn. Their diarrhea or gastrointestinal problems or ulcers disappears or gets better. In fact, looking at the stomach of a pig that was fed GM soy and corn compared to non-GM soy and corn, we see the GM soy and corn was linked to inflammation and ulcers. So we have a situation where we have evidence from lab animals, testimonials from humans and doctors, livestock experience, pets. Lots and lots of pets were getting diarrhea and inflammatory bowel when GMOs were introduced into the pet food. Many, many veterinarians realized this and told their pet owners to switch it. I have actually testimonials now of pet owners talking about this.
And it's a dramatic change, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, I'll give you one example. A Danish pig farmer switched to non-GMO soy and didn't tell his farmhand. But 2 days later, the farmhand came up to him and said, "You made a change in the feed." The farmer said, "Uh-oh, what happened?" He said, "No more diarrhea." They had fatal diarrhea that was so bad it was killing piglets. It was going on for 2 years. 2 days into a non-GM soy diet, the diarrhea disappeared. Now let's talk about, before we get on to the next disease, I really want to explain why GMOs might be causing these problems. This is the kind of stuff that, I mean, what I'm about to say is the most important piece. We have all the correlations.
Yeah, there's a scientific reason, isn't there?
Exactly, exactly. Now, there's two major traits to GMOs. There's the GMOs that create their own toxic insecticide. It's called BT toxin, and that's corn and cotton. And then the other trait, which is far bigger, far more crops, are the crops that can be sprayed with a poisonous weed killer, and the crops don't die if they've been genetically engineered, but the weed killer gets absorbed into the food portion which we eat.
So it passes on to people.
Exactly. So we have two toxins, the BT toxin, which is an insecticide, and the Roundup, for example, which is a weed killer, which is the herbicide, which we consume. Now, if we just look at the characteristics, George, of these two toxins, which are in the U.S. diet, that could explain these gastrointestinal problems.
It sure could. And let me ask you this, though, real quickly.
Sure.
Is the GMO food doing what it's supposed to do, aside from the illnesses, the humans and animals? But, I mean, is it fighting disease and insects the way it's supposed to?
Well, the herbicide-tolerant crops are now being overrun by weeds that have outsmarted Monsanto.
Oh.
So the
Mother Nature does it again, huh?
Exactly. And then the the bugs, the rootworm, for example, that is supposed to be killed by the BT toxin in corn, it is now eating the BT toxin as food because it has become resistant in many, many states. So the technology is failing, and the USDA just approved another type of herbicide-tolerant crop that produces a carcin that is resistant to a carcinogen. So what we can now, we're going to have a lot more of this carcinogen chemical spray.
Oh,
see what happens is when there's so many herbicide tolerant weeds, then the farmers spray more of the herbicide so that it is effective, and that's caused an increase in herbicide use in the United States in the first 16 years of GMOs by over half a billion pounds. So there's so much Roundup, you find it in 60 to 80 to 100% of the air samples and the rain samples in the Midwest, and you find it in the urine of city dwellers, you find it in the surface water and the groundwater.
No wonder people might be getting so sick.
And then when I tell you about what Roundup does, let's start with Roundup, okay? Roundup, turns out it kills the beneficial gut bacteria. It's a very, very powerful antibiotic. Now, if there was, you know, kanamycin, if there was some kind of ampicillin, if that was like poured onto the crops, people would be up in arms. But Roundup is a very strong antibiotic that kills all sorts of bacteria, and it's in the food in high concentrations, and it can wipe out the beneficial gut bacteria, which is important for digestion and immunity.
This isn't like the old days where you just merely washed your vegetables.
Oh, no, you can't wash it off.
You can't wash it off. It's
you
inside.
Pour on the thing, 80% stays in the plant, 80%.
In the old days, though, it was just on the outside, right?
Well,
you just washed it off.
In the old days, we thought it was on the outside. It sort of depended on what was sprayed. Here, the glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, is mixed with something like a surfactant, which pushes it into the plant, and then most of it stays in the plant.
Well, and however, let me ask you, Jeffrey, if it's sprayed, and even in the old days, if it goes into the soil, isn't that plant going to suck it up anyway?
You know, sometimes the plant will pick it up from the soil, and sometimes the plant will put it into the soil. Yes, we do have evidence that plants can pick up Roundup or glyphosate from the soil.
Are we doomed?
Well, you know, no. We're not doomed from the Roundup because in 10 or 20 years or 30 years, it'll degrade. But the genes, they self-propagate. The Roundup-ready genes, they're going to outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. The only thing that lasts longer on the planet than the genetic engineered traits is extinction. That's because it's a self-propagating pollution. It just goes generation after generation. But it'll go less and less. If we knock GMOs out of the park, which I think we'll do, it'll become less and less contamination as we have many, many more non-GMO seeds introduced.
Let's say we make this reversal.
Uh-huh.
And this percentage that you gave us the last half hour, which I think is huge, about these various crops, let's say that it all goes back to normal seeds, if there are any left. What does that do to a company like Monsanto? Do they go out of business? Do they have to change? What happens?
They certainly have to change because the bulk of their money comes from the genetically engineered seeds and the Roundup, which is sold for Roundup-ready crops. Now, they are the largest seed company in the world. When they decided to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world, which was their stated goal, described by their consultant in 1999, they went on a buying spree and became the number one seed producer. So they actually have a monopoly in some of the species, and they're using that to raise prices and to force contracts onto farmers. In fact, Brazilian courts in one state this week just said Monsanto's gone way overboard and consider what they're doing illegal. And courts in Mexico have just said that they're kicking out Monsanto and Syngenta because the corn will cross-pollinate and cause environmental catastrophes.
And I've got to ask you, Jeffrey, because we've given up trying to get them on the show with you. Why don't they have somebody on and battle you?
You see, back in the late 90s, they hired a PR firm called Burstyn Marsteller, and they handle, like, you know, the Union Carbide disaster in Bhopal. They handle really horrible stuff. And they told Monsanto that do not engage in debates because the debates are the killing fields, because consumers are concerned about the long-term health effects and environmental effects. And you don't want to create a venue where consumers become exposed to that. And of course, I'm all about the health effects. Now, occasionally I'll talk to a former Monsanto person, and I can tell you what some of these people have said, and it's absolutely horrific what goes on in those companies, in that company. For example, I talked to a former Monsanto scientist. He admitted that when the GM corn was fed to rats, it caused severe problems with the rats. And so they, instead of withdrawing the corn, they redesigned the study. They rewrote the study to hide the effects. Now, he said to me he was extremely concerned because the corn, the percentage of corn in the rat's diet was not particularly high. Maybe it's typically 33% at the highest dosage that they serve. And they only serve it for 90 days. So he said, in the people in South Africa, they eat 70%, sometimes more, of their diet as corn, and they eat for an entire life. He said, if the rats were hurt in just 90 days with that level of corn, what's going to happen to the South Africans? In my movie, Genetic Roulette, which you can go to geneticroulettemovie.com, it describes the situation where these African, South African farm workers were eating 100% GM corn as their main staple.
All the time.
And they were dying, according to the farmer, and out of a group of 60, one or two per month were dying. And many others were sick. You had to have 20% more farm workers because so many were out with sickness, colds, severe headaches. When he switched the corn to non-GM corn, and that was just to make the cows and pigs get better because they were hurting, then he didn't realize the connection. All of a sudden, the farm workers got healthy again. He ran out of the non-GM corn, had to buy the GM corn from the market. Both the animals and the workers got sick until he could find a permanent storage of non-GM corn.
What a story. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre. Are doctors getting involved with you, Jeffrey?
We're going to actually speak to some doctors at the GMO Summit. We're going to talk to, for example, Sarah Gottfried, who is she's an MIT Harvard-trained MD. She's an expert on women's health and hormones. And we're going to talk to her about how Roundup can be affecting the brain and the hormones and the moods. We're going to talk to Dr. Tom O'Brien at the summit, and he's an expert at gluten and gluten-related disorders. He's kind of a gluten guru. And we're going to talk about how GMOs could be disrupting, creating holes in our gut, messing up the gut bacteria, suppressing the ability to digest, messing up the immune system, and all of those are related in gluten-related disorders. Now, I've given talks in the last 7 weeks to five medical groups, to chiropractors, naturopaths, doctors, nutritionists, etc. And I've been doing this since 2006. And at the beginning of the talks, I say, how many of you are prescribing non-GMO diets? And at the end, I say, how many of you plan to prescribe non-GMO diets? In the beginning, nearly all the doctors were not prescribing. And then by the end of the talk, nearly everyone decided they were going to prescribe. So now we have thousands of doctors just from these talks alone prescribing non-GMO diet.
All right, how do you prescribe a non-GMO diet? I mean, actually, you go into a store, how do you know?
Well,
if nothing's labeled, how do you know?
You go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com, actually. We make it easy for people. At non-GMOshoppingguide.com, we also have an iPhone application, Shop No GMO.
So you can walk through the store with your phone, right?
Exactly. And there's over 10,000 products that have been verified by the Non-GMO Project, an excellent third-party verifier, as non-GMO. Now, when I say that we have tipped the scales in the natural food industry, I want you to hear the impact of this quote from the Whole Foods president from March of this year. He said to the AP reporter, it was reported in USA Today and many places, he said, when a product in his store becomes non-GMO project verified, it increases sales by 15% to 30%.
That's huge.
That's so huge. It basically, there's an avalanche now of people in the natural food industry trying to get their products non-GMO project verified. And so we have tipped the scales there. And we've tipped it, wow, by telling people about the health dangers. Just like we did with the bovine growth hormone, Monsanto's creation, the genetically engineered drug injected into cows. A former Monsanto scientist told me that three of his colleagues tested the milk, found so much of a cancer-promoting hormone in the milk that the 3 months Monsanto scientists refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. So we educated the parents about the cancer risks, and it was kicked out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Danone, most American dairies.
They hate you, don't they?
I'm not on their Christmas list, but I am on other lists. They actually spent probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, trying to investigate my past to try and discredit me, and they can come up with nothing. So they say, well, you shouldn't listen to him because he's a dancer. So I like to dance.
Well, you should be on Dancing with the Stars.
No, thank you.
Okay, California last year defeated Proposition 37, which would have required labeling of GMOs. That was out. That kind of shocked me. State of Washington, they're looking at it now.
Yes, Washington has an excellent chance of winning. And, George, they have a higher – they're just generally polling higher than California. What happens in Washington is they grow apples, they harvest and sell salmon, they grow wheat. These three commodities are all at risk because the FDA wants to approve salmon, apples, and wheat.
Well, salmon is already Frankenfish now,
well,
isn't it?
Well, no, it's not yet out in the market. It's been threatened, but it hasn't.
Well, but they're making them. Where are they?
Well, they haven't commercialized them. They've been making them in a research center in Panama, and in big tanks.
What if they get away?
Exactly. They did a study where they had genetically engineered fish, similar types, and these are ravenous fish. They're growing it like twice as fast. Okay,
so that's what they want.
Exactly. They're growing really fast, but they're very hungry. And when there wasn't enough food in the tank, these fish, these frankenfish, became basically cannibals. They would kill and sometimes eat their competitors, causing complete extinctions of populations or shrinkages down to just one or two. Now, they also were more aggressive.
Oh, they would eat themselves? Their own kind?
Yes. They would eat them and kill them.
So you might have, let's say, a little pool of 100 of these frankenfish salmon in there. Maybe only one would be left?
Exactly. Or none. Now, the thing is, they also found that if they mate with the brown trout, their offspring become ravenous and aggressive, and they grow faster. So imagine it gets released into the ocean. You may end up with these mutant, ravenous, aggressive frankenfish going around and destroying over time the populations of other species.
And what about somebody who's swimming? They might be like little sharks.
Now we're getting really into frankenfish. It's true. I have no idea. I mean, no one knows. They want to release these with no way to recall them. In the same way, they've already released mosquitoes in the Cayman Islands, in Malaysia and Brazil. They want to release them in Key West. They want to release fruit flies. They want to basically genetically engineer nature.
Way too much. It's out of control.
It was never controllable. That's the thing. They pretended it was controllable.
Why do we have to fool around with Mother Nature?
Well, you know, it's all about profit and control in this case.
That's all it's about.
It's amazing how much money is available in the food industry. And if you control the seed, you control the food.
And the world.
So Monsanto's got some big plans.
Now, if we decided somehow one day to go back to natural Mother Nature food, seeds, are there enough on the planet?
Well, you can always grow out more seeds. For example, right now, if we wanted to go completely non-GMO soy and corn in the U.S., replacing not only the direct food, but the animal feed.
I would say there's not enough seed
for every
farmer.
No, but what you do is you end up growing, you grow the seeds in two or three seasons. You grow in northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, a three-season growing in Hawaii, and you end up building up the seeds. Just like it took a few years for them to dominate and completely capture the seeds in these, soy and corn, et cetera, we can just take the few years and reverse it.
What happens if the natural seeds are never available?
Well, that actually is...
That's a nightmare.
That's a nightmare scenario.
If that's possible.
It certainly is, especially if someone, you know, aggressively bought them all up and then destroyed them. Now, Monsanto owns most of the germplasm, which is what they create the seeds from, for corn. So, you know, if they decide to lock it down and not meet with the requirements of the market, they'll make everyone angry, but they can actually delay the replenishment of the seeds dramatically.
That's scary. Jeffrey, we're going to come back, talk more, and take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.